Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for the 35th episode of Into the Killing. If this is your first episode, thank you for listening. Hopefully you'll find it interesting. If you have listened to other episodes, thank you so much for your support, and thanks for coming back and listening again. For this week's episode, we're going back to the year 1996. That year, disaster movies reigned supreme at the box office. The top-grossing movie of the year was the alien invasion flick, Independence Day. The second biggest was Twister. For music, 1996 was a massive year for Canadian women. According to Billboard, the number one album was Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. Celine Dion's Falling Into You was number three, and number six was The Woman in Me by Shania Twain. The top song was the massive, culture-changing, one-hit wonder, Macarena, by Los Del Rio. In 1996, Richard Miller, who went by his middle name, Craig, was on parole. He had been released from prison 2 years earlier after serving a dozen years for sexually abusing his 10-year-old stepdaughter. When Miller was released, he had to register as a sex offender and provide a current address. He told the authorities that he was living with his parents in Redlands, California. His parole officer set up a home visit and checked out Miller's bedroom. He noticed that it was clean and barely lived in. He suspected that Miller wasn't actually staying there. The parole officer asked Miller for a drink of water. When he was left alone in Miller's room, he pulled the sheets off the pillow, then placed a pen on the pillow and pulled the sheets back over the pillow. The parole officer then told Miller that everything looked good and he left. A week later, the parole officer did another home visit. He found the pen in the exact same spot where he had left it. So he knew that Miller wasn't sleeping at his parents' home. The parole officer asked California's Department of Justice to put surveillance on Miller and figure out where he was living. 34-year-old Special Agent Steve Utter was given the case. Utter tracked Miller and he learned that he was living in Calamasa, California. Calamasa is a small city that's 70 miles east of downtown Los Angeles. The home where Miller was staying was searched, and some Polaroid photos that were pornographic and a gun cleaning kit were found. Agent Utter had a bad feeling about Miller. He read the case file on him. According to Miller's first wife, he despised women. His parents got divorced when he was young, and he blamed his mother for it. In 1982, Miller was interviewed by a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist made the following notes. It seems to him that his appointed task in life relative to the opposite sex is to extract as much pleasure from them as he possibly can, while at the same time inflicting as much pain and anguish on them as possible. He shows no inclination to alter his perverse and dangerous sexual behavior and is quite likely to continue upon his eventual release back into the outside community. Utter did not think that Miller had been rehabilitated, and he thought he was probably going to hurt someone else. So he wanted Miller off the streets for good. Utter believed that if Miller were convicted of failure to register as a sex offender, he might be sentenced to 25 years to life under California's three strikes law. In late 1997, Miller was convicted of failure to register, but when it came time for sentencing, Utter received a shock. It turned out that the prosecution's filing paper listed the wrong year when it came to the offense. The judge refused to let the prosecution amend the date. The judge said that Miller deserves to be in custody for the rest of his life. But then, he offered Miller a deal. The judge said he would sentence Miller as if he had no previous felonies. So instead of getting 25 years to life, he offered to sentence Miller to just 7 years. He probably would get parole after 5 years. Miller accepted the deal and he was sent to prison to serve his 7-year sentence. A few weeks after the sentencing, Steve Utter was going through the prosecution's file on Craig Miller. He came across a 5-page letter that had been sent to the judge after Miller was sentenced. It was from Miller's former wife, Barbara Lunsford. Lunsford's daughter was the girl that Miller had sexually abused. She wrote, "Please do not take what I have to say as a lack of respect for your position, but you, sir, have made a terrible mistake." Over the 5 pages, Lunsford detailed the atrocities that Miller committed against her and her daughter. Lunsford explained that she first met Miller in middle school. They reconnected later in 1980. Not long after they were married, he started to torture her sadistically. Beatings happened daily. One time, Miller got a .357 Magnum revolver and he put a bullet into every other chamber. He spun the chamber, put the gun to her head, and pulled the trigger. Luckily, the chamber was empty. A&E's Cold Case Files interviewed Barbara Lunsford, and she talked about how horrifying life with Miller was. She said that he would point a gun at her face, and then he would pull the trigger. When he did this, she would open her eyes and feel her face to make sure that her face was still there. She said he did this so many times that she lost track. Another time, Miller strangled her until she lost consciousness. When she came to, he was standing over her and laughing. Miller told her he knew to stop strangling her because her eyes were bulging out of her head. After about a year, Lunsford finally broke it off with Miller. Then one day, he kidnapped her and took her to his grandmother's trailer. For 3 days, he beat, raped, and tortured her. On the 3rd day, he finally let her go. Lunsford's daughter also felt the long-term effects of the abuse she suffered. She was emotionally scarred, and she was unable to conceive children. The contents of the letter were disturbing, but what stood out to Utter was what Lunsford wrote on the last page. She wrote that when she and Miller started dating, he was driving his grandmother's El Camino. Miller told her that he did have a red pickup truck, but he said he wrecked it one night when he was drunk. He claimed he had crashed it in a ditch. A few months after they were married, he had a new, disturbing story about what happened to the truck. He claimed he was following a woman in her car and he rammed her several times. He eventually ran her off the road and her car overturned. He said that he saw gas leaking from the car and he could smell it. He told Lunsford that he saw the woman's arm hanging out the window and she was pleading for help. Instead, he took out his lighter and set the car on fire. Initially, Lunsford thought that Miller made up the story to scare her. He was regularly abusing her at this point, so she thought it was just his way of psychologically torturing her. But then she saw a newspaper article about a single car accident. Lunsford didn't remember many specific details from the article, but the crash sounded a lot like the one Miller claimed to have caused. Lunsford thought that the woman's name was Naomi. She said that the woman was from Nuevo, which is a city that's about 75 miles east of Los Angeles, California. After reading the letter, Steve Utter called Barbara Lunsford. He told her that he believed her story about Miller running the woman off the road. Lunsford explained that Miller used to threaten to kill her all the time, and he said he would get away with it. At one point, Miller told her about running the woman off the road to prove he could kill someone to get away with it. She assumed he had made up the story. Then he kidnapped her and took her to his grandmother's trailer. On the table in the trailer, she happened to notice an old edition of the Press Enterprise newspaper. That's where she saw the article about the crash. She realized that Miller was probably telling the truth. Lunsford said that Miller told her that he wasn't alone that night. He said that he was with a woman named Linda, and she was a barmaid at the Winchester Inn, which was a country western bar in Winchester, California. It was about 10 miles from the scene of the crash. Lunsford told Utter that she didn't know Linda and didn't know her last name. After talking to Barbara Lunsford, Utter had two potential leads, the article about the crash and Linda, the barmaid. Utter first decided to track down the newspaper article. In 1998, Utter couldn't just go on a computer and search for old newspaper articles. Instead, he went to the Press Enterprise building and started going through their archives. After about 3 hours, he found a description of an article that sounded useful. He then got a microfiche copy of the article. It said that early on the morning of March 28, 1980, a 44-year-old woman from Nuevo named Alba Napier had died in a single car crash in Winchester, California. Her car left the road and she was thrown from the vehicle. Her vehicle then caught fire. At the time, it was just another person who was driving home late at night and lost control on a dark road. After reading the article, Utter realized that this must have been the article that Lunsford had seen. Utter then went to the Winchester Inn, which was a country western bar with a notorious reputation. He talked to the current owners, and they directed him to the couple who owned it in 1980. Utter asked them if they remembered a barmaid named Linda who had worked at the bar 18 years earlier. One of them remembered a woman named Linda Morris. Utter checked the records, and Linda had changed her last name to Parrott. It turned out that Parrott had lived a rough life. In 1994, her grandson was tragically killed in a house fire. In 1996, her daughter was in the wrong place at the wrong time. A gunman accidentally killed her daughter instead of the person he was aiming for. When Utter discovered that Parrott was possibly with Miller when he ran Alma Napier off the road, the gunman was standing trial for her daughter's murder. Utter thought that since Parrott's daughter was a victim of a homicide, she might be willing to discuss Napier's death. On May 27, 1998, Parrott was asked to step inside a private room in the courthouse. Utter, a deputy district attorney, and a detective from the sheriff's department were in the room with her. Utter explained who they were and why they wanted to talk to her.
I'm here about another investigation that we're conducting. I'm looking into something that happened a long time ago. Okay, we need to go way, 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 way back to 1980, to when you were a waitress at the Winchester Inn.
Bartender.
And this particular incident happened in March of 1980. It resulted in the death of a woman. Does this sound any more familiar to you? Yes.
You may not have been able to hear it, but Parrott said, car accident. It turned out that Parrott had been haunted by that night for a long time.
Can you kind of go back in your mind, back to 1980, and tell me what happened?
Tell you exactly what happened. Greg Miller.
Parrott said that on the night of March 27th, 1980, she and Miller went to the Winchester Inn together. They were drinking heavily. Parrott said that she was playing pool with a woman that she learned was Alma Napier. Parrott said that Napier was losing and she started mouthing off. Parrott said she didn't want to get into a fight, so she walked away and went to the bar. Then Miller started arguing with Napier. Parrott said that her next memory was getting into Miller's red pickup truck. They started driving behind a friend of Miller's, Mark Ackerman. They were planning on going to Ackerman's home. Suddenly, a car pulled up behind them without its headlights on. Miller turned his truck around and caught a glimpse of the woman in the car. It was Alma Napier. Napier then made a U-turn, as did Ackerman. Then they started jockeying for position. Eventually, Ackerman pulled in front of Napier, and then Miller got behind her. Once Napier was boxed in, Miller started ramming Napier from behind. He hit her car 5 or 6 times over the next 5 miles. Then they came up to a curve, and Miller rammed her. Napier's car went off the side of the highway, down the embankment, and flipped over several times. Once she had crashed, Miller pulled his truck over. He walked over to the car and pulled out his lighter. He flicked it, and the car burst into flames. It was only then that Parr saw Napier's body lying in the dirt about 30 feet from the vehicle. She went and checked Napier's pulse, but didn't find one. Parrott said that Miller dragged her back into his truck, and they drove off. After the crash, Miller was only upset that the front of his truck was smashed up. He showed no remorse for killing Napier. A week after the crash, Parrott said she saw Miller for the last time. He told her that if she said anything about the murder to anyone, they would take away her children. So that is why she kept it a secret for 18 years. After talking to Parrott, Utter tracked down Mark Ackerman. He confirmed the details in Parrott's story. Utter then found the man who Miller sold his truck to. He said that when he bought it, the front end was badly damaged. Utter also got Napier's autopsy report. It turned out that Napier didn't have any drugs or alcohol in her system. Utter had no idea why Napier followed Miller and Parrott on the night she died. But tragically, it cost Napier her life. Utter also wanted to know more about Alma Napier. It appeared that she lived a quiet life. She wasn't married, and she didn't have any children. He only found an estranged sister who said that Napier sold real estate. What is known is that Napier loved animals, and she lived on a farm with sheep. She had taught herself to speak Italian. Richard Craig Miller was arrested on July 17, 1998, and he was charged with second-degree murder. Miller denied running Napier off the road and said that was a lie created by his ex-wife. He said that his ex-wife had ruined his life. 44-year-old Craig Miller went to trial in September 1999. Miller's lawyer said that there had been a duel with cars, and Alma Napier was a willing participant. He said that when Napier slammed on her brakes to avoid hitting Ackerman's car, Miller accidentally hit her from behind, and this caused her to go off the road. Her death was simply an accident. Linda Parrott testified, and she said that Napier's death was not an accident. She said that Napier had been boxed in, and Miller purposely ran her off the road. She said they were the cats, and she was the mouse, and she had no way out. After a week-long trial, Miller was found guilty. He was sentenced to 15 years to life. Thanks to the hard work of Special Agent Steve Utter, a murder that the police had no idea happened was solved after 18 years. Richard Craig Miller was first eligible to apply for parole in February 2009. His request was denied. It has been denied 3 more times since then. The last time he applied was in September 2020. He'll be able to apply again in September 2025 when he's 70 years old. At the time of this recording, Richard Craig Miller is 66 years old, and he is serving his sentence at the Ironwood State Prison in Blythe, California. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Our producer, fact checker, and sound designer was Anel Coutier. If you just discovered this podcast, you should check out our YouTube channel. We have about 325 videos featuring some bizarre but true crime stories. You can find it at youtube.com/criminallylisted. But that's all for this week. Thanks again for listening. Stay safe and take care of yourself.